This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. With social gatherings picking up now that spring is here, it can be easy to ignore your social battery and spread yourself thin. So what's the right amount of socializing for you? Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. It's a great way to build relationship skills, figure out your goals, and so much more. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/beherenow today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/beherenow.
Hello and welcome to the Shakti Hour, a podcast on the Be Here Now network, where I speak with women about their personal experience on the spiritual path. I'm Melanie, and today I'm speaking with a wonderful teacher who is part of the Yoga Glow network of teachers. Her name is Jo Tatsula, and this conversation was very deep and personal. I'm so grateful to her for her sharing honestly about her own experience with the death of her mother and the passing from one phase of life into the next and the evolution of her own spiritual understanding and practice and teaching. I found this interview to be a big turning point for me in listening to the conversations that are evolving here on the Shakti Hour among many different women on the spiritual path and what that means for us to share with one another and to put these stories into the public view or on the audio, the public ear. And I really found it super helpful in talking with Jo to just see the value of each of our struggles, triumphs, insights, understandings, our personal experience, the value of each individual's personal experience on the spiritual path and in life, and how being present to that experience is the gift that each of us gives back to the other, to each other. Because her capacity, Jo's capacity to remain present in this transformational moment, which she'll share with you here, and then to retell that story for me to hear really does give me the strength to retell my stories and to see the value in my being present to each of my hurdles, challenges, triumphs, victories, mistakes, understandings, and evolution. So this conversation has a nice easy pace. We were just coming off a week-long retreat on Maui for the Ram Dass Spring Retreat. And so I hope that you will take some time with this here and enjoy listening and possibly relating and seeing the benefit of your own individual wisdom, each moment that we get to have our own insight into the experience of becoming, the experience of awakening, the experience of being present to the now is so valuable to the greater good, to the whole. And no experiences is too small or insignificant to be of benefit to the rest of us. So please enjoy this conversation and remember to subscribe to the Shakti Hour on iTunes. And thanks very much for listening. Welcome to the Shakti Hour. This is Melanie, and I'm here on the Be Here Now Network, live from Maui, with Joe Tatsula, a wonderful yoga teacher who I discovered on Yoga Glow several years ago. And we're going to just take a minute to talk and get to know each other.
Wonderful.
Yeah. And I just learned that Joe and her husband just moved to Maui this year. Correct?
We did, yeah, in February. Yeah. We've been here about 5 or so times, popping in and out, visiting Ram Dass and coming on retreat and whatnot. And then it just occurred to us, well, why don't we just stay here? You know, why are we making it such a priority to come here, spend time here, trying to organize when we can just really just move here? And when we said it out loud, it felt so good. You know, it was a yes moment of like, yeah, clearly. I want to say that Ram Dass is a big part of that. I feel such a heart connection with him and with his the people who are in his life. I find them so loving, genuine, and I and Stu, my husband, and Soleil, we want to be a part of that, and we want to add to that. And also I have a connection with Polynesia. My dad was born in Fiji. So that's a little connect there, and I've always been drawn to the Polynesian culture, felt really aligned to that lineage. So it feels like an ancestral cyclical thing that I'm carrying on here. Yeah.
So just to back up a bit, how did you come into practicing yoga?
This is my 20-year anniversary for Yay. Practicing yoga. Yay! And I want to say that, so I was in my 20s, but it had been on my mind for years that it was something that I should do. And I really just thought, no, I'll come back to that. No, I don't really have the time. And the time was right. I was working in the film industry and I was, threw myself in completely, had no life outside of film, and it was very, very stressful. And I walked into a yoga studio because I just thought I need something, and I knew that yoga could be that thing to help me just
How did you know that? Do you know how you knew that? Were you exposed to it before, or?
No, I don't know how I knew that. I was not exposed to yoga before that. I grew up in a very remote, mining town in the middle of the desert in Australia. So with no television and no anything, there was a dirt road going to the town, and you know, a very small town. So we didn't have a lot out there, obviously. But my mum and dad gave me the gift of not giving me any answers to life, not giving me any religion or any containers of which I could make sense of things. It was always, well, just find out for yourself. Find out for yourself whatever you think it is. So that, I think, ignited a real seeker spirit in me, because I thought, yeah, I want to find out what this is. And so somehow I must have attached yoga with a way, or you know, a path of finding out what life is, because I had I had dabbled in Christianity. I enrolled myself into Sunday school, even though I wasn't baptized, and the nuns allowed me to because I was very studious and very keen, you know. And I did that for a few things of trying to, find out the path. And then, and maybe it was an old memory, a past life thing, I don't know, but yoga was calling. And my first class, even though I can't really remember the details about it, I remember the feeling of being at peace in my body and in my mind. And from day one, I became completely devoted to the practice.
Wow. Do you think that you knew that because you had tried to doing these other things? Or do you think it was the contrast from your film life was so drastic to when you got into the class? Or
yeah, I think that was a big part of it. I think also that I had never really felt peaceful in my own body. And I had never really felt that my body was sacred in any way. I inherited a lot of negative body issues. My mom, who was just gorgeous, had an internal dialogue of like, you know, I can't eat this, and oh, I don't fit into this. And I think I just inherited that. And it was all around. That type of negative self-talk was all around in my friends, and you know what I was hearing on the street. So it was very radical to have an experience of being at peace with my body and being in awe of my body and having something switched on, that there's something to explore inside, not outside. And all of those things, along with the stressful life on film, I think was what really brought it home for me of like, this is a worthwhile practice.
I love this story. There's two things that come up for me listening to that. One, it's that it's kind of like that you find love when you're last looking for it.
Yeah.
Because it was so potent, you know. Oh, maybe I'll try yoga. But because it was so this potent moment, like, really sat in you. And then I also just love that you were given this capacity to find for yourself from your family, the way you were describing that.
Yeah.
So that you would even be able to tune to that within yourself. I mean, that's actually a really profound teaching.
Yeah, it was a gift of freedom. Spiritual freedom, and alongside with that freedom to be a seeker, that freedom like it was a almost like a challenge, you know. If you want to find out the meaning of life, you go out and find it. you know, and that really struck a chord with me. And also in that environment, there was a presence of the Indigenous community out there, the Australian Aboriginals. And at that time, a lot of the community was still living outdoors, camping, and there happened to be a camp right across the road from our house, and they would have a campfire every night, and they would do, you know, ceremony and songs and dancing, and that I grew up with that, not knowing how special that was. That was very ordinary. But now coming into yoga, and you know, even in this retreat setting, in the bhakti spirit, that that coming together and the ceremony and song together reminds me of that time in my childhood, of how important that is, how important the community coming together is, how important it is to hold each other up. Yeah.
And so that makes sense to me now, and your willingness to move to be close to that.
Yeah.
Especially with your cute little daughter. She's so beautiful. To offer that possibility.
Yeah.
For her to experience as well.
Yeah, she's I'm really excited for her life, because she's seen some amazing things, and she's only three.
Yeah.
You know, she's you know, swam in the pool and laughed and played with Ram Dass, and she's been to Rishikesh, you know, when she was one, and you know, she seems really smart and has it all together at three. So I'm pretty excited for her life. And those lessons that my parents gave me of, like, trying not to indoctrinate her too strongly into any one thing, because I realized that my beliefs, my knowledge is limited also, you know. Even though I have been practicing yoga for 20 years and have done a lot of seeking, a lot of journeying, I still have no idea what life is about. I suspect it has a lot to do with love. That is, that was a gift that was given to me when my mum died. She wanted to die at home, but I wasn't able to keep her at home. It was just too hard. So I put her in hospice. And it was 2 weeks in the hospice before she passed away. But so I wasn't with her all the time. And so I said to the staff, like, please, if you think she's going to pass, can you call me? So I got a call at like 1 a.m. The staff said, you know, I think she's close. So I got in the car and I sped to her, and I was singing mantra, trying to, like, you know, stay connected with my heart open, be brave, you know, bring with me all my tools. And as soon as I got into the room with her, I felt I felt a bit removed from what was actually going on. And I was looking at her struggling to breathe, and I was thinking, is this her last breath? Is this her last breath? And then it dawned on me that, like, I'm not breathing with her. I'm just looking at her, thinking in my own mind, which is the exact opposite of what I wanted to be there for. So I got up in bed with her, and I curled up and I cuddled her. And as she took a breath, I took a breath, and we just breathed together. And I just focused on the love. I just focused on the love, not the fear. I focused on the love. And that took me into just a recurring mantra saying, there's only love. There's only love. Like, the love is real. This love is real. There's only love. There's only love. And Then a nurse walked in and she said, "Oh, I'm so sorry for your loss." And I hadn't realized that Mum had passed away because I was still in the love that never went away. And that was an awakening teaching for me of like, that love was real. She went, but the love didn't go. And that was as strong as ever. So,
and what a profound,
that
profound
was all
teaching.
Yeah. That was all there was to focus on in that moment. So yeah. I suspect that that is what life is about, and what is the real currency of life. Yeah,
that is an incredibly moving story, and so practical in a way too. That the experience of that, the mantra, the chanting, all the work that had come up to that, and not even that you necessarily were thinking ever that I'm working towards this moment, but that surrender into that, in that physical moment, was able to communicate that truth to you.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like, I've experienced that feeling. I'm sure you had experienced that feeling before. But to really literally embrace it.
Yeah.
Embrace the knowing.
Yeah, it was profound. It was profound.
Yeah.
It was such a highlighted experience of that moment. I was in my head. And I was in a complete state of fear and detachment. The moment that I got out of my head and connected to my heart, I was completely present and in the loving realm,
in the eternal.
In the eternal where death doesn't matter because it goes beyond death. So that was, in fact, that whole year I was so profound because in the, within 8 months, I experienced my daughter's first breath and my mother's last breath. And to have those polar experiences in such a short amount of time, blew my head off in a way that indoctrinated me so deeply into life and what life is about that I'm still trying to put it into words and apply it. Yeah. But I know that through that, there's been some fundamental shifts.
Yeah. And Ram Dass is a great place to hold that experience.
Yeah.
Story that you're telling now and that understanding. This would be a great place to be able to match that.
Yeah.
And allow it to integrate in a way that wouldn't have to dilute it or wouldn't even have to be explained.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
No matter what question you ask Ram Dass, for the times that I've been with him, it always circles back to I am loving awareness. And his love for his guru, Maharaji. And you can't ask him a question that doesn't take him back to that place. So I feel that place that I experienced with my mom, with my daughter, I feel like he's living that a lot of the time. In fact, most of the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. And how nice, and how nice to be able to be around it as it's settling into your cells and into your work. I mean, it's striking me in hearing the story for the first time that, how this is going to come into your work, and you were just saying how you're going to talk about it and how it's going to, how you're going to live it.
Yeah.
And being supported while coming to terms with that or coming into that expression.
Yeah.
Is super. Yeah.
That has been it's been a big thing actually, because I am a teacher and I've been teaching for quite a long time, and so I have a certain way of explaining things and breaking things down. But I did feel like when I started teaching after my mom passed away, that not that I was lost for words, but things were coming out completely different, and it was as though I didn't even know my own practice. It was as though something completely new was coming out, and a lot of things that I thought as staple, I had to throw aside because they were no longer relevant.
I had an experience like that after I did my retreat with Ram Dass. I went back to New York to do a class, and I'd been doing classes at this little shop that my friend had in the East Village, and I went in to do the class, and everybody was excited to come to class because I had just been with Ram Dass, you know. And I went in, and it was literally like I had, you know, four left feet, because everything I was trying to say, it was come, and it just totally bombed. And yeah. At a certain point, I was like, people were leaving, which has never happened to me before, you know, and I just was like, I, you know, was in my heart, and Ram Dass was just give it to Maharaji. And I was like, oh, this isn't mine anymore. Not that I was thinking that I was holding it like that, but this isn't mine to give.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
And I love it. And it, that whole thing ended with a young girl, my friend's daughter, came in and drawing hearts and putting butterflies on the heart. I mean, she was the only person I could relate to in that moment. All the other, you know, wonderfully talented, smart, sophisticated New York women, you know, that was, I couldn't communicate with them yet.
Right. And the people who want to hear that message are, you know, are in a different stage in their practice. So there is definitely a shift in who comes to your class and who doesn't anymore, because you can no longer play the game that you were playing before because it's not relevant and it's not truthful.
Right, which is so nice, you know, just in thinking of all the different teachers that there are and the value of that.
Yeah.
You know, because I wasn't put on notice that was going to shift. You know, I didn't know that I was going to sit down and suddenly have a different point of view and not be able to speak. But I do think that it really is magical in this way. And I love that aspect also of Ram Dass's teaching when he's been asked about Maharaji, and people have called him out and said, that's your imagination. You're using your imagination. And he says, yes. Yes, I am.
Right.
Yes, I am using my imagination. And I just love that playfulness and that capacity to be okay with the mystery of it.
Right. Absolutely. And it's, you know, we're only, all of us here are only surmising what we think, is, you know, life is about and how it happens and what happens next. Because who really knows? No one knows. So to stay in the mystery is a wonderful thing. And also to not to take yourself so seriously, because, I mean, you what you were yabbering on about, you know, a couple of years ago. It was definitely truthful at the time, but even truth shifts as things change, as, you know, as life evolves, as you grow. Your truth then is not your truth now. So you have to, you can't take yourself seriously, because you know, in a couple of years, you're going to be onto something else, you know, and look back at yourself and think, oh, I knew nothing. I was so naive.
Well, can you say more about that? Because, you know, I think if I was listening to this and hearing that story, you would think that that is the most profound experience. And Duncan was just sharing that in the satsang earlier about, oh, I had this amazing experience of meditation, da 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 da, and then I kept wanting to get back.
Right.
I kept wanting to get back. Right. To that. So can you speak about how that's unfolded for you since then, or if you've had that kind of, what kind of relationship you've had with that moment?
Yeah, I don't think of that moment as limiting. I think of that moment as a gift and a blessing. And I would never want to go through that again or replicate that, because that was catastrophically heart-shattering. My world became untied. The bubble burst. The bubble that my mum and dad put around me, and that life, that burst. So life was this big thing without them. So it's not that I would ever want to recreate that at all. But what it did do is awaken me to the fact that, you know, every moment things like that are happening for people. Every moment, you know, this moment right now, someone is having an enlightened epiphany of some sort of download, some sort of miracle, you know. And if you can be open to hearing other people's stories, if you can be open to sharing your own story, you know, you start to get a bit more of the puzzle. But if you're defined by it and closed down by it or limited by it, then yes, that's a problem. But I think of it as a blessing, and it makes me even more curious about life and even more curious about other people's experiences, and, you know, listening to people talk who have something real to say.
Yeah, it's like I was getting the image of like a shooting star. So there's all these different shooting stars. It's not all just one shooting star.
Right, right. That's right.
And they have their, and all those different moments, have yours. Mm-hmm. And then you can also sit back and see that reflected in these other shooting stars.
Yeah.
It doesn't even have to be the same thing.
That's
so
right.
So you don't have to hold on to the trail.
Yeah.
Try and ride with it to, I don't even know where shooting stars go or what that phenomenon is.
Yeah.
Scientifically. But I love that idea that you can just bear witness or listen to, hear it reflected in another miracle or in another blessing.
I love hearing people's stories of awakening. I love hearing those magical moments, because it just ignites the flame even more of the mystery that this is, and how limitless the possibilities are for things happening. Hmm. Yeah.
So this the idea of surrender, back to you're standing at the threshold to the door. Mm. Of the threshold to the bed, or I see you at the door. Mm-hmm. You're probably in the room already.
Yeah.
And you had done your practice on the way in. Somewhere you exited into the mind.
Yeah.
Do you know what happened that brought you into the heart? Do you know what awakened you to that?
Oh, what a beautiful question. Thank you. I haven't thought of that. It could have been grace, would be my first answer. It could have been the thousands of hours that I've spent bringing myself back from, you know, my thoughts to my breath. And those moments, those small little moments of awakening, it could be that,
just the practice, just the muscle practice, and cellular memory of the practice.
That practice of coming back, mm-hmm. that practice of realizing, oh, I've gone somewhere, I'm not here, you know, this is important. And obviously for things like birth and death, you are present, you know, but in life, mundane day-to-day stuff, it's not exciting. So it's very easy to fantasize about other things, mm-hmm. but the practice, I think, helps us in those catastrophic moments. In those catastrophic moments, so you don't miss it. You know, you've got one chance of your child being born. You've got one chance
right.
of your parent dying to be there.
Yeah.
You don't get to redo it. So it's a worthwhile practice so that whatever comes your way in life, the big things, the important things, you're there. You're there for it.
Right. Well, that is a great plug for practice.
Right, yes.
You know, because it's at a certain point, your practice can actually become just a habit.
True.
In some kind of a way.
Yeah.
Now, not a terrible habit to shift from the head to the heart, but there's something else that's behind that, that's keeping that alive and present.
Yeah.
Do you have any experience with that, or does that...
Yeah, I think I know what you're talking about. For example, when I had a life where it was just me and I had no real big responsibilities, I could do a 2-hour yoga practice in the morning. And then I could, you know, read some classical texts on philosophy, or, you know, study some anatomy or whatever. And I had all of that space. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it. But when things really went down, I had to let go of my practice because I didn't have that time. And it became the essentials of, like, I just need to be grounded at this moment and not lose my cool as everything goes to chaos. So then it becomes a real life practice of, what can I do to ground in this moment? You know, okay, I'm going to take a few deep breaths. I can do that, you know. So yes.
And what are some things that you do, like just some practical things that you would say that would be, how can I get grounded in this moment?
One thing that I used to do was called feet in the earth, hands in the sky. So I would take my shoes off, I would go outside, I would stand barefoot on the earth, and I'd reach my hands up to the sky, and I'd take a few breaths. And I found that that was both grounding, centering, opening, you know, all at once. That was fantastic. I would play mantra. So even if I wasn't just able to do that myself, I would just have that on in the background. That would just...
Some sort of recording.
Some sort of recording that would just keep my mind circling back to what's important. But yeah, that too easy, you know. But definitely the feet in the earth, hands in the sky.
Yeah, that's a great one.
I did that a lot.
And a few deep breaths. There were three.
Yeah.
A few deep breaths.
A few deep breaths.
and having some sort of reminder.
Having some sort of reminder. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because in times where things are really uncertain, fear takes over. And that is in the realm of the mind. And you can get taken so far into fear that you don't need to go there, you know. Yes, at a certain point, for example, you know, if a loved one is ill, you may have to face that, but at that time it's not happening. So at that time, you know, just be with what is. Be with what is.
Yeah.
And then I found that, you know, now that I have some space and I can do a long yoga practice, I have a little bit more context for it. I know that, like, wow, I really needed this stuff. You know, I really need, this is important. And so I cherish it even more. So it has not gone back to being a routine thing for me. I really do cherish it.
Right. So it's not the habit or the routine is maybe just a part of the practice.
Yeah.
Is part of, again, building that muscle memory and yeah. structure.
Yeah.
And yeah, at any given moment, there will be some kind of chaos or some kind of uncertainty.
Yeah.
That, you know, could serve as a test, but can serve as an opportunity to engage that and see. I mean, I know Ram Dass tells that story about failing the test of having his stroke, and he didn't think of God when he was about to die.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And he's like, I failed the test, you know? Which is such a beautiful part of his story and mm-hmm. him as a teacher.
Yeah.
And listening to you here now, you know, following this retreat, you know, your story as a teacher, these moments are presented for your teaching.
Yeah.
And so I love that, in the same analogy with the shooting star, that being present for your moments is your offering to the world.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's as complicated as, you know, the Hindi pantheon of deities, and, you know, it's a chaotic realm. But what it does offer is that reminder that this moment is the only moment, and that really all of the other things are pointers, are just pointing you back here to the moment, you know, way of explaining our humanity, way of explaining different experiences, way of explaining, you know, the craziness that this whole thing is, but all pointing back to that it's not a rehearsal. This is a one-time thing.
Right.
This is it. Pay attention.
This is the moment.
This is the moment.
Yeah, this is it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It feels to me that is a very fluid perception, and you know, just talking a bit about the feminine and in this flow of the life cycle mm-hmm. from mother to daughter.
Yeah.
Mother to daughter.
Yeah.
Mother mm. to daughter. I feel like most of the spiritual teachings at their core come to that, but a lot of the ways of getting there are A, B, C, D, E, F,
mm-hmm.
G,
right?
Gold star.
Yeah.
H, I, J, K, two yeah. gold stars. And yeah, can you speak to anything about that?
Yeah, I can. before my mom was ill, I had a thought that I wanted to explore the divine feminine, the divine mother. Like, what is this feminine force we call mother? And I had gotten into shamanic practices and spent a bit of time in Peru and really thought that I wanted to explore that. And when I look back now, I laugh because I was so naive, you know, thinking, oh, the divine mother, I want to explore that, what that is, you know, so I can teach about it in my classes, and you know, and everyone will be happy. But but what I realized, you know, that divine feminine energy, that is the creation, that is the birth, you know, that is the and me trying to nurture my baby and nurture my mum, you know, the preserver, but then ultimately the destructive force, you know, the Kali and the death, and that is the journey of the feminine, is to stand at those two portals, to be present, to go through it, to bear witness. So I discovered that, you know, even though I lost my mother, now I'm the mother. I am the mother. And my lofty goals of like wanting to get to know the divine feminine, like just look at my life. That is the divine feminine, you know, that birth, that creation, that experience of giving birth, that holding your baby, that, you know, feeding your baby, that first breath, and then all the way through to the, you know, your heart ripping out of your chest, saying goodbye to your own mother and trying to make sense of that and being present for that. Like that is the whole journey of the feminine. And it's quite something to stand in that. And it's quite something, you know, I imagine for my partner to have experienced me going through, you know. So now when I talk about the divine feminine or I hear about that, I have a lot of reverence, and I also have a lot of not caution, but just just some space around how powerful that is.
I think of Mount Haleakala as that expression of that. You know,
right.
The island itself, you know, is alive. Has mm-hmm. been created from this beast. This, you know, this Mother Earth,
right,
literally, right,
yeah,
there. And you don't know what the weather is going to be like up there. You don't know what is going to be happening up there, you know, because yeah. It has its own chaotic, creative flow, vortex of energy. I mean, it's such a powerful expression of that.
Mm.
And I think... personally, the idea of parsing out feminine and masculine, or parsing out the divine feminine from femininity,
mm-hmm.
or from womanhood or from girlhood, is a bit foolish, you know. So
yeah.
So what you're saying is true, that we're living in that is it.
That's the experience. And it's absolutely not to say that, that, you know, we are, if you're born a female, you just have a female perspective or experience of life. That's not true. I mean, we all are made of both aspects, both energies coming together. I mean, the whole creation of a baby is male and the female coming together and that unity. And in yoga, talk a lot about the masculine and the feminine aspects of energy, the Ida and Pingala nadis and the Sushumna being the coming together. So it's not to say that you that it's void of masculine experience or perspective, but it's also stating the obvious of, like, when you're a woman, there are certain things that you do that you don't do if you're a man. And definitely the one of giving birth, definitely the one of being in sync with nature, having a moon cycle, you know, that bleeding every month, you know, that sort of thing it's a powerful thing. It's a powerful thing. And I think should be celebrated a bit more, or talked about a bit more, or brought into conversation a bit more, because that voice has been lost.
Yeah, it's just, even as we're sitting here talking about it, and or trying to talk about it, or it just feels like it is what we are uncovering.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of right now in our consciousness. And somehow, whether or not there is some other time when that understanding was more present, you know, I don't know when that would have been.
Mm-hmm.
And we look to other cultures to find that. And it's there, and it's in our own culture as well, but it's such a vast subject, and something that maybe is why it has been silenced.
Mm-hmm.
And that it doesn't have or doesn't yet have a voice, a literal presentation. Mm-hmm. There's the way of holding that experience, or the way of talking about that experience, or the way of communicating in terms of teaching or sharing that experience is potentially not in language even or in the structures that we have available to us right now, developed in a way that we can share it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. There, I think, you know, there are a small select group of people who have had the luxury of being born into a place where there is, you know, somewhat equal rights and, you know, opportunities, but we can easily forget that that is definitely not the situation for many women on the planet today. And just going back a few decades, that was definitely not the case. So, you know, not that I want to beat anyone down or anything, or but I think that there needs to be there is space for that reminder of, like, okay, these stories have not been told for a long time in a big way, and that it is an important thing to do, to get together and to talk about everything that a woman goes through. And you know, bringing back into normalcy, talking about women's cycles, or you know, God forbid, breastfeeding in public or, you know, yeah, all of those things that have a lot of shame attached to them, or dirtiness or insignificance. And I think having more open conversations brings more balance, more normality to those very real topics.
Yeah, and it's just more stories.
Yeah.
More authentic.
I feel like I rambled on it a bit there.
Well, but no, but you know what? That's what I'm saying, is I feel like this is the conversation that's beginning.
Mm.
Is, and that's part of the question behind my desire for the podcast is, you know, partially do we need to talk about it itself, or is it good to just begin to explore our own experiences and sharing them more and more voices sharing our personal experience on the spiritual path, our personal experiences in life, you know, to humanize the feminine.
Yeah.
maybe the divine feminine, yes, is not what we need to, maybe we need to first humanize the feminine, and then we can you know, worry about getting connected to the divine,
yeah,
aspects.
Yes,
of
yes, humanize and not demonize.
Yeah, yeah, mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, so now you're here on Maui, and you're starting to write about this.
Yeah.
And what do you have in your teaching right now that you're seeing with people you work with, or just feeling yourself, that you think is a piece of guidance or a piece of advice that maybe you might offer to women and girls on the spiritual path?
Mm. All of the great teachers that I love and have gotten great life guidance from have always pointed me back to myself, to my own heart. And I would want to offer that to any young girls out there who are on the path, and there are so many different voices and so many people talking with authority about, you know, lots of different things, but just to ask that basic question of, are you being empowered through that teaching? Is that teaching helping you to make the transition from your head to your heart? And if it is, yes, that is a worthwhile thing to explore. And if it's not, it could be good information, but ultimately, you know, that's not the real thing. The real thing is hidden in plain sight.
Right. It's interesting in a variety of ways when I ask that question of women that it's directed, oftentimes being directed back to the self, or back to the heart in some kind of way. And I just realized it now, that even that is part of the story. It's part of the healing of the story, in that that's such a needed point of view.
Yeah.
For women.
Yeah.
Even at this moment in 2017.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wait a minute. What is it? Who's here?
Yeah.
What was it? What I was doing again?
Yeah.
Where was I going?
Yeah.
And I love all the stories that you shared about your own life too, in that there's so much caretaking and nurturing in these stories that you shared today. But all of that was grounded through this continuing to turn back inward.
Absolutely. Yeah, and that has been the most empowering thing is that, you know, I think Lama Suryadas was saying this a lot last year, and I've been echoing it ever since, is like, you do a lot of seeking, but at one point in time, you have to do some finding. And that spoke so beautifully to me at the time, where I thought, you know, you're right. I've done so much seeking. I have been around the world again and again and again and chasing after different teachings and teachers. But ultimately, you know, when I really needed it, I came back to myself and to my own heart. And that's when the real awakening happened. And that was empowering. That it's not out of your grasp. It's right there.
Right.
And yes, we may need guidance and tools on how to remove some of the distraction so that we can really be with that deep place inside, and that's helpful. But ultimately, you know, it comes from within. The every source of love and happiness that you experience in your life, it doesn't come from anywhere else. You generate it yourself. And to have that introspection of where's that coming from?
And to accept that responsibility, which I think also is a feminine or a feminist potentially issue of the... I'm just going to go there, the patriarchal, you know, dispossession of the power of the female. So, you know, up until, it's still going on now, but up until very recently, the woman found her power through whatever man was in her life.
Mm-hmm.
So it's culturally, like, the momentum behind that is way... is already blasting forward.
Right? Yes.
So... this coming back into to generating your own happiness, your own reward, your own power.
Yeah.
And that it's already there.
It's already there.
Yeah.
And the simplicity of it is that you don't need to buy anything. You don't need to read anything. You don't need to wear any particular clothes, you know, It's already there. It's already there. You don't need anything. It's so simple.
Right. And you're a great teacher for that, because you were given that opportunity. You were empowered to be self-empowered.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
which really is a gift. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, this was great. I'm so glad that you were here.
Thank you so much. Yeah. Thank you for coming up to me in the line. That was wonderful.
Yeah.
It's not often that I get to, like I was saying to you, I often teach over the internet. So a lot of people who take my class, I would never know until someone comes up to me and says, hey.
Right. Yes, I've studied with you, you know, for years.
Yeah.
We've never met. Yeah. Yeah. So that is a great reminder. You can find Joe on Yoga Glow.
Yoga Glow, yep.
YogaGlow.com. Lots of wonderful new and archived classes there. And she's here on Maui. And I think you teach a couple times a week here in Maui too.
Yeah. Yeah. I've just started teaching a little bit here. And also I split my time between here and Perth in Australia. So so if anyone is in Maui or in Perth, you can go to my website at joetestula.com.
Great. And you can find her there. And we'll have links to that on the Shakti Hour page.
Thanks so much again, Joe.
Thank you so much.
Lovely speaking
with you.
You too.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. With social gatherings picking up now that spring is here, it can be easy to ignore your social battery and spread yourself thin. So what's the right amount of socializing for you? Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. It's a great way to build relationship skills, figure out your goals, and so much more. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/beherenow today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/beherenow.